And also, you know, what we've seen in the last couple of weeks is governments starting to drop assistance by air, and announcements of a potential maritime corridor and other initiatives. But this is no replacement or alternative to the land routes that humanitarian organizations are using and should be allowed to use without restrictions. Children are being starved as, you know, hundreds of trucks filled with food are waiting at the border to enter Gaza. We're also calling on governments who have announced suspensions of funding to UNRWA to resume funding. UNRWA is the backbone of the humanitarian response in Gaza, and no organization in Gaza will be able to deliver the assistance required without that support. We're also calling for accountability. And, you know, the decades of no accountability is really why we are where we are today. We're calling specifically on accountability for children and the Secretary General of the UN to list all parties to the conflict as perpetrators of grave violations against children in armed conflict in the Secretary General's annual report on children in armed conflict.
That was Alexandra Sayah, head of humanitarian policy and advocacy at Save the Children International, speaking at the War on Gaza, Impact on Palestinian Women and Children event held on March 13, 2024, organized by the Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Hi, I'm Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show, right here on KBOO. This Friday, I interview returning guest Dr. Peter Spendelow as we discuss the environmental impacts of food. Peter has worked as an environmental scientist in Oregon for 38 years, which lends local expertise to our discussion. Tune in on Friday, March 22nd at 11 a.m. to learn about how food production impacts our environment on KBOO 90.7 FM. Portland.
Did you know that KBOO is streaming live on the web? Well, you do now. Just type www.kboo.fm, click on Listen Live, and you've got us. Just another example of how KBOO 90.7 FM Portland works for you. It's your community radio.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con ánimos.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Hello, and welcome to Voices for the Animals. I'm your host, Michelle Coppola.
A lot of people say that an octopus is like an alien. But the strange thing is, as you get closer to them, you realize that you're very similar in a lot of ways. It's a hard thing to explain, but sometimes you just get a feeling and you know there's something to this creature that's very unusual. There's something to learn here.
That is a clip from the award-winning 2020 documentary, My Octopus Teacher. Have you seen it? If you haven't, I can highly recommend it. There's also a new best-selling novel that features an octopus. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's called Remarkably Bright Creatures. It's by Shelby Van Pelt. It is a great read. And in addition, there are also several new terrific natural science books out about these very intelligent cephalopods. So there is no doubt that octopuses, which, by the way, is the preferred plural, not octopi, are having a real moment in pop culture. But octopuses are also a very popular food, and so that has made them next on the list to be factory farmed. Coming up in just a minute, we will speak with Ben Williamson, U.S. Director of Compassion in World Farming, about the latest efforts to stop a planned octopus farm in the Canary Islands and why several states in the U.S. are now passing laws against it. But first, I'd like to bring you a quick update. You know, for the past few years, this show has been reporting on the sad story of Tokate the orca, also known by her performing name of Lolita, and more importantly, by the name given to her by the Lummi Nation in Washington, which was Skalichoktonal. Toki had been captured off the coast of Washington State when she was just a baby, and she was forced to live and perform in a small tank at the Miami Seaquarium for over 50 years. Now, the sad story is that just as efforts to return her to her home waters in Washington were gaining traction, last year, Toki died from renal failure and other conditions brought on by years of captivity. It is important to know that the Miami Seaquarium where she lived was cited in past years many times by the USDA for violations in animal care, and there have been protests for years about the conditions in which Toki and other aquatic animals lived at the park. A few weeks ago, we finally got some good news on that front.
Miami-Dade County is saying so long to Miami Seaquarium. The county sent a letter, which amounts to an eviction notice, telling the company that owns the attraction to be out by April 21st.
This comes after years of controversy surrounding numerous building violations, maintenance issues, and concern for the welfare of the animals.
It's the end of an era.
The situation at the Seaquarium is so dire that we believe terminating the lease is the best course of action to ensure safety.
And some say good riddance.
It needs to go. It needs to be bulldozed right into the ground.
Ida is thrilled that the county is finally terminating the Seaquarium's lease after more than half a century of miserable animals and false promises to clean up its act.
They have been the subject of continuous violations, including decaying animal habitats, lack of veterinary staff, and a lack of other experienced staff members.
The current state of the Miami Seaquarium is not the place that we visited as children, and it's not the place that we want our children to visit.
A 2023 USDA report made multiple disturbing discoveries, like a 2-inch nail found in a dolphin's neck.
These animals are not being provided the proper resources and the safe environment they need, and I remain concerned about the poor quality of animal care that has been repeatedly documented.
That was CBS News Miami reporting on the eviction of Miami Seaquarium, which, in my opinion and that of millions of others, cannot come soon enough, especially considering that their only veterinarian recently quit due to conditions there. The owner of the Seaquarium disputes those charges, however, we do have to mention that, and says that they will fight this eviction. Also, no word on what will happen to the hundreds of birds and aquatic animals still captive at the Seaquarium if they are forced to leave. Those animals remain the property of the Seaquarium, but we will keep you posted as that situation develops.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
Okay, speaking of aquatic creatures, octopuses, let's get back to them. They are known as intelligent, mysterious creatures and recently have been the subject of a couple of wonderful documentaries like My Octopus Teacher and some great books as well, like Remarkably Bright Creatures. which, by the way, they actually are. However, they are also very popular as a food around the world, especially in Asia and in the Mediterranean. Now, in order to meet the growing demand, a company called Nueva Pescanova is seeking to build an octopus farm off the coast of the Canary Islands south of Spain. Now, there's been a lot of opposition to this plan for many good reasons, and here to talk with us about it is Ben Williamson, U.S. Director of Compassion in World Farming. Thanks for being here, Ben, and let's start with this. Aquaculture, or the farming of aquatic animals for food, has been going on for a really long time. So why are so many people against the farming of octopuses for food? What makes them so unsuited for factory farming of this sort?
I think the first thing that you touched on is that they're just remarkably bright animals. They're surprisingly sophisticated. They behave in very intelligent ways. They've been observed building shelters from pieces of coconut shell. They can learn set tasks quickly and remember them from a long time. They even recognize people and faces. They've managed to steal bait off fishing lines. And as I say, they even keep gardens, you know. And I think for this reason, the sentience of these animals just makes life in captivity that little bit more worse. Than you know, life in captivity is horrible for most species, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it makes octopuses particularly unsuitable for farming.
I just had this conversation to some degree, talking to Wayne Pacelli with regard to the gestation crates that pigs are put in. And pigs are amazingly intelligent animals. And so that kind of captivity for them is even worse than some other animals that we put into industrial mass agriculture, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very similar to octopuses. So for their entire lives, they would live in crowded, barren underwater tanks. They, like pigs, they wouldn't be able to escape. They wouldn't be able to move around. Octopuses are a naturally solitary animal. So when they're put in a tank with others, they become very aggressive. They're cannibals. They're carnivores. And they can even cannibalize themselves. Mm. So they establish an order by fighting with each other. So when they're in the tank, there's nowhere for them to escape. And so they succumb to the pressures of farming, and it doesn't end well.
The most recent outcry about farming octopuses has come because there's a company, Nueva Pescanova, who has proposed putting a very large octopus, industrial aquaculture site off the coast of Spain, is my understanding. They've applied for all kinds of permits, and they are fighting at this point to get it done and are unable to do so. Now, I understand that octopus farming had been tried once before off the coast of Hawaii. What happened there, and what was the outcome?
Yeah, well, we have some good news to report there. Back in 2021, I believe, Compassion World Farming wrote a letter to Hawaii's governor saying just the problems I've explained, that these animals are intelligent, that they're naturally solitary, that farming them should never be done for the welfare of the animals and also because of the environmental destruction. Hawaii is very big on the environment. And it turns out that this facility, which is called the Kanaloa Octopus Farm, which was essentially researching the ability to farm octopus, but hadn't been very good at it. These octopuses were dying at an alarming rate after just a few days of being taken from the wild. It turns out that they were taking these animals from the wild illegally, and so their permits were revoked and the facility was fully shut down. So that was some good news to report. So octopus farming has never actually taken hold. There's been plenty of places that have tried it. Nueva Pescanova, as you say, is the latest place. It's a Spanish seafood company, and they're trying to establish a facility in the Canary Islands. So as you say, it's a Spanish protectorate, and they're trying to build what would be the world's first commercial octopus farm in the port of Las Palmas. So Compassion World Farming is obviously again involved, and we're hoping that the Gran Canaria government doesn't accept the environmental impact assessment and doesn't grant them permission to set up shop there.
So one of the arguments that Nueva Pescanova is making is that we are decimating the wild populations of octopus to feed the growing demand for octopus as a food source. It's part of the food traditions all over the Mediterranean and in Asia, and of course the United States eats quite a bit of it as well. But won't more fishing be required to actually feed the octopuses because they're carnivores?
That's right. You know, by some estimates, it takes about 3 pounds of wild caught fish to produce fish meal, to produce 1 pound of farmed octopus. So that's incredibly unsustainable. And we're talking about fish that would go into fish meal, 90% of which humans could eat if they wanted to. Mm. So that's a really inefficient way of producing the food that we eat. But of course, wild caught fishing has its own problems too. We're actually right. overfishing. And if you think that farming octopuses in octopus farms is a way to help wild caught populations, I think people would be sorely misguided by that, because all it will do is lower the price of octopuses, create a market that isn't already there, and we'll see wild caught populations diminish, as well as creating untold animal welfare concerns for the octopuses in farms.
You know, I want to circle back to what you were talking about, creating a demand that's not already there. One of the things that this company that is proposing the octopus farm is saying is that, you know, the demand is increasing exponentially. It's going to go up by over 20% in the next few years. And how do we feed all these people? What is the answer to that? I mean, is it really necessary to do this? Is the demand something that's being created in order to justify this farm? How do we feed the people?
Yeah, octopus consumption is definitely increasing. By some estimates in the US, it's increased by about 4 times over the last 35 years. So it's gone up to about 27,000 tons in 2018, so last year we have data. So it's definitely on the rise. It's seen at the moment as a kind of luxury food in the West. Asia actually accounts for 2/3 of the reported global octopus catch, and China alone accounts for more than 1/3. But it's still a bit of a niche food. And I think for that reason, as people become more adventurous in their eating, it's the nicheness of it that means people are trying more, and the availability. You know, you can get anything you want at a touch of a button these days. But Compassion World Farming's message is that we shouldn't be trying to create more markets for these luxury food items that have untold environmental and animal welfare concerns. Instead, we should be looking for planet-friendly food, like food made from plants, like food made from animal cells and precision fermentation, which do wonders for the much better for the environment and can leave animals alone.
I do not want to dwell on this too much, but most people do understand the mechanics of how cows and pigs and chickens are harvested and raised. And I'm not doing this for shock value, but I do think it's important that we understand how octopuses are harvested and processed in a large-scale operation such as the one that is proposed by Nueva Pesca Nova. Can you give us a little more information about how that's done?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're proposing killing the animals by something called ice slurry, which is a highly aversive and inhumane method that's been scientifically proven to cause considerable pain and fear, as well as a prolonged death. It sounds better for the producers because it cools and preserves the fish while actually killing them, so with very little additional effort or cost.
So wait, they freeze them to death? Is that basically...
They freeze them so that their bodies are paralyzed, so that they stop moving, so that their heart rate reduces. But what's been shown is that the brain activity actually continues for many minutes and even several hours in some fish species. So while their physical reactions may stop, their consciousness actually continues for a substantial period, and sometimes they even face the knife whilst they're fully conscious. So ice slurry is not a humane method of killing the animals at all. Because they may, even though they're not able to display any outward indications of suffering, you can bet that they still are, even though they're not moving.
You know, I was heartened to see that Washington State has just recently passed a law that would outlaw the creation of any octopus farming in that state. California is considering it as well. Were there any potential plans or any prospective idea to do this in the United States? Because right now it just seems to be limited to this one in Spain.
Well, you're absolutely right. It was fantastic. The bill in Washington's passed the legislature there, and there's one that's been introduced in the state of California. The only one that we're aware of that actually tried to get off the ground is the one that, as you mentioned, unsuccessfully was shut down in Hawaii. What those bills in Washington and California do is trying to preempt the market developing. So we want to get ahead of the game. We don't want to be playing catch up, and we want to stop these facilities from even considering having plans to open. Washington was a good state to start with because they've had trouble with offshore fish farming before, and California obviously is quite a progressive location, and sure. And it's the start of many animal welfare initiatives. So, you know, we're hoping that once these bills pass on the West, we'll be able to shift further east and towards the middle of the country. And eventually the plan is to pass national legislation to prevent to make sure that octopus farming doesn't take hold. We're also calling on Congress to include cephalopods in the Animal Welfare Act and Humane Methods to Slaughter Act, which they currently do not. Mm-hmm. Invertebrates aren't part of that, and as we know, octopuses are invertebrates. So there's a lot to do. There's a lot of loopholes, as I know you're aware of, in animal protection for farming. So we're trying to close some of those gaps.
So what is the status of Nueva Pescanova's proposed octopus farm project at this point?
So they're waiting on an environmental impact assessment. We all are. We're really looking forward to that coming out. It can come out at any day. We're actually hopeful that we'll have some good news very soon. If they pass their environmental impact assessment, then they still have to go through authorization for discharges from the land into the sea. They have to have a maritime land domain concession, and finally the aquaculture activity license. So there's a few hurdles for them to jump through yet, but as I say, we're hopeful that they'll fall at the first hurdle, because the Gran Canaria government, this really isn't something that they want associated with their brands. You know, one thing we haven't touched on yet is what it does to local fishermen to have to be competing with these big aquaculture facilities, because as you say, we have to catch so many wild caught fish to feed these farmed fish that is actually taking food out of the mouths of subsistence fishermen. And so for many reasons, the environmental reasons, the animal welfare reasons, and the social justice reasons, we think there are many reasons to not allow this facility to go forward.
I was going to actually, I'm glad you touched on that, because I was going to ask you a general question about aquaculture as a whole, you know, how it impacts not only the environment, but also the communities around it in terms of the small fishery industries. Can you speak to that a little bit in a little more detail?
Yeah. So in, you know, the use of wild caught fish in aquaculture is creates food security issues in regions such as West Africa, where the Canary Islands is, Southeast Asia and South America, where these industrial reduction fisheries are mostly located. So when industrial agriculture produces fish meal, they have fishing technologies, and they enter into competition with the local fishermen. So they affect the local communities, since they rely on small fish for their livelihoods. And the kind of fish that are ground into fish meal, we're talking anchovies, we're talking sardines, herring, mackerel, you know, the kind of fish that we know humans are capable of eating. Around 90% of the fish meal that's fed to fish is safe for humans to eat. So, you know, there is a lot of competition there, and it's taking money away, it's taking food away, and creating these food security issues for local fishermen. So, you know, there are, as I say, there are plenty of reasons to dislike the idea of this facility going ahead.
And there's a runoff issue as well when you have these large-scale aquaculture operations, you know, the waste and diseases of these farmed animals going into the environment, correct?
Yeah, that's one of the environmental impacts. So pollution from nitrogen and phosphorus being released from feces and food decomposition. You also get contamination from fertilizers and algicides and herbicides and disinfectants. And also these animals are likely to be fed antibiotics, like many farmed animals. And all of this has to end up somewhere, and usually it ends up in the sea. So, yeah, that's just one of the many environmental considerations. We've talked about the sustainability of the fish farming, how it's inefficient in terms of animal protein. So yeah, it's not without its problems, for sure.
So I've noticed that there is quite a bit of opposition to this particular project around the world. As a matter of fact, there have been some demonstrations and so forth. If people listening to this really want to get involved in stopping this kind of thing from happening and expanding, what can they do?
I'm really glad you asked that question. So we're calling on the Canary Islands authorities and the Spanish government to stop these and any future octopus farms. And we're urging the EU government and also the US government to pay more attention to the intelligence of cephalopods to octopus and really consider them as part of their understanding of animal intelligence and increasing their moral community to include these animals. So in the EU, they're trying to support an EU-wide ban on octopus farming. In the US, as I say, we'd actually urge people to go to ciwf.com right now and take our action to urge your member of Congress to include cephalopods under the Animal Welfare Act and the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act, so that it's very unlikely that these animals will be able to be killed and farmed here in the United States. And then just, you know, share the fantastic documentaries as we started our conversation with. You know, watch those, get an appreciation for octopuses yourselves and share them. And hopefully we can make ourselves more aware of just how amazing these animals are and then expand our sphere of compassion for them all.
I would like to reiterate how much great information and actionable items there are at your website. Compassion in World Farming is the name of your organization. CIWF.com is where you can go, or CIWF.org.
That's right. We've pretty much all the domains listed at this point. CIWF.com is where the U.S. information specifically is.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals, and we've been speaking with Ben Williamson, U.S. Director of Compassion in World Farming, about the efforts to stop octopus farming. Compassion in World Farming is an amazing organization that works to improve conditions for food and working animals worldwide, and I do encourage you to go check out their website and become involved. You can find links to their site, more information on octopus farming, and a podcast of this episode on our show page at kbu.fm. And just a reminder, KBOO is a volunteer-powered, listener-supported station, so while you're there, please consider becoming a member or making a donation by clicking the donate button at the top right of the page. I'm Michelle Coppola for Voices for the Animals, and thank you so much for listening. Until next time, please be kind to animals, to each other, and most of all, to yourself.
I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden, in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden, in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see. We would be warm below the storm, in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our head on the seabed, in an octopus's garden near a cave. In the shade. We would shout and swim about the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me, no one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be thank you.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning and welcome to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform, which means we are funded by you, the listener.